Tuesday night. You play. Hello everyone, welcome to Oh What A Night, part of the 90 Min Podcast Network. On the show today, Hunter Godson, Jude Summerfield, Sean Walsh and Dan Kilpatrick from the Evening Standard. Off the back of a Spurs 2-0 win away at Aston Villa that takes us into the international break. How's everyone getting on? Everyone all right?
I'm ill.
It's the black lung, Bob.
Yeah, I don't know. It's what you said to me earlier, Haynes. It feels like we're so close to the end of coronavirus. I'm just praying that I haven't somehow sneakily got it. But I'm sort of losing my taste day by day. You know, I'm just like, oh shit.
Everything crossed for you that it's not corona.
Yeah, exactly.
That we're on that the final march in the war. Do you know what I mean? Now is not the time to get shot.
No.
Shawnee, all good?
Yeah, all good. I went to see some football this weekend that wasn't Spurs, so that improved my mood a little bit.
Well, I see a little bit of you pitching Ivan Toney around?
Yeah, I went down to Brentford. They drew with Nottingham Forest. Ivan Toney looks like a Premier League player who's just far too good for the Championship. I've ever seen one. Hopefully won't be joining us because that'll probably mean that Kane's off. So I'll try and ignore that.
Glass half full. Jude, yeah. What was your end?
Yeah, I'll just say, yeah, I had a nice weekend. Watched a load of rugby and cricket on Saturday and it was too late on Sunday for Spurs to ruin it. So, yeah.
That's nice. A very, very good approach. Very good approach. And Dan, like, I mean, thankfully for you, off the back of having watched Arsenal and the Zagreb game, and then did you travel to Villa as well?
I did, yeah. I was at Villa last night.
Oh, God, thank God it was a win, because that would have been a horrid trip home.
Yeah, I'm so relieved for a variety of reasons. But, I mean, I've got to say, mainly from a work perspective. On Thursday night, I was just really kind of looking forward to, like, an easy night. I was off on Thursday. I was like, you know, this will be a routine win and I can get my copy in for the website. I can file my piece for the paper and I can have a nice line tomorrow morning. And I'll probably be done by 8:30 and I'll have a beer. And I was working till like midnight and I've been 7 and I was just like, I can't cope with supposed to being the crisis club tomorrow today. So I was really, really relieved that they put the crisis back on ice for the time being.
Yeah, we did speculate as to when you said to us all it didn't. I mean, yeah, it didn't feel great last week, and then you went quiet. We were like, "Oh God, is Dan all right?"
Oh, Dan's hand. I wasn't in some kind of downward spiral of negativity. I was just gutted about work more than anything. I mean, obviously, I was. Disappointed Spurs went out of the Europa League, and it was such a famously humiliating night in every respect that anyone associated with the club, be it fan or player alike, had to feel some kind of tinge of humiliation, I think, at that. But no, it was more that I was very much looking forward to relaxing on Friday, and it just didn't happen.
Why do you think we didn't get any sort of player chat off the back of that? I mean, Hugo Lloris came out, but then from that moment on, there wasn't really any talk, was there, from any of the players in terms of them doing the kind of standard social post, like, we'll make up for this, etc.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I mean, I saw Toby did the club website in a kind of night to forget type vibe, or we'll put it right.
An affair to remember.
It always reminds me, like, after defeats of the kind of Redknapp era, me and some friends used to always try and predict, like, the headline on the club website. It was always something like, after Chelsea, it was always like Bridge of Sighs, and it was always like Doors Will Bounce Back or something. It was like, yeah, routine, or Harry One of Those Days.
Yeah,
it's a bit more varied.
It was always one of those days. It was always one of those days with Redknapp.
Yeah, it was always one of those days. Yeah. But yeah, Lucas spoke to me after the Villa game yesterday. He seems to be the man kind of fronting up at every opportunity at the moment, probably because he's playing well and he's obviously a kind of very much committed Mourinho disciple. And there's obviously this suggestion that you know, the dressing room's a little bit divided at the moment, but he's... We know which side of the divide he's on, and So he fronted up, but I didn't notice the lack of social media action, to be honest. So that's quite interesting.
Mm. It does feel like that was very controlled though, right? Because you got Lloris, you got Toby. And then last night, after the game for Sky, at least, they put Harry out. And it did feel like they were like, these are the cheerleaders that we can rely on to sort of get across the point. And maybe we don't want some other players coming on and giving their opinions at this moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the way it works. I mean, yeah. did anyone see Dave Heitman's piece in The Guardian about Harry Kane not speaking to the media?
No,
I didn't see that.
Okay, well, I feel I can say it now because The Guardian's written it, but he did a piece in the wake of the Europa League defeat just saying Harry Kane hasn't spoken to the written press since, I think, before November, and sort of suggesting it's not a good sign, which I thought was interesting, and I tend to agree with, because Harry Kane would always kind of come forward and you know, do the mix zone in ordinary times, or perhaps do a sit down with the Sunday papers, or even just get on the phone to us after the game. And he hasn't done that for a while, which does kind of suggest that he's, you know, thinking carefully about what he would say if he was asked difficult questions, because you know, broadcast or flash interviews after the game, you know, tend to be of a different variety. They just tend to be kind of, you want to hear from a player about the match and about the key decisions and, you know, maybe about, you know, things in the immediate term, not kind of bigger picture questions. So that's one to keep an eye on, I guess. And Kane is obviously going to be doing England duty this week, which you know, Spurs...
It's wet and wild, isn't it, Dan? When it gets onto international duty, suddenly the questions change dramatically and the narratives just go 180.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it'd be interesting to see if he does it.
When your press officer is not standing right next to you, it's like, right, what have I been wanting to say then? Right, he's a wanker. He's gone.
You know who's really good for that is Belgium.
Belgium's a free-for-all, like, isn't it?
It literally is Westworld out
Belgium's
there.
Belgium's a free-for-all.
Players turn up on international duty and they, honestly, it feels like they're fighting to get onto that press conference. I can't wait to just get some sort of news line out there into the ether, which is just amazing. We should talk a bit about the game. did anyone else have that feeling when it went to 2-0 where you're like, this is good, but I'm still really, it's like, you're still thinking about the bad news, aren't you?
I think all of us were exactly like that, right? We were all just thinking, yeah, this is nice. I think it probably not helped by the fact that it was just a sort of, it was a bit of a nothing performance from Villa. They were very abject. They if anything, they rolled over and allowed us. They'd seen what had happened on Thursday and they went, God, they need something. Give them a penalty and give them a really cheap bit of defending. But yeah, you're right, Hensley. You're still left with a very sour taste. I think Mourinho said it, didn't he? He was like, those scars are going to take a lot more than a 2-0 against Aston Villa to heal. And he's spot on there.
Yeah, it's nice that whenever Tottenham win a game, you can always caveat it with, but the opposition were really poor, weren't they?
Do we need to stop doing that? Do we need to stop doing it? Do you think?
I don't think we need to stop doing it because Villa were very bad yesterday, and Spurs haven't beaten anyone good for a while. It's just a pattern, isn't it?
There is always, I suppose, the argument that's put back out is that you can only beat the sides that are put in front of you, and yeah. I mean, getting a win over Villa away from home that is undeniably a very, very good result.
That's our best victory against someone in the league. In terms of positions, since is it Arsenal?
Or I think it's
always since Arsenal.
It was 8 out of 8 against top half sides that we hadn't beaten before.
So it's a very good result.
No, because Arsenal weren't in the top half when we beat them. So before that,
well, there you go. Then even before that, so it's a very good result. But the performance is, we'll get into it.
So let's start then with the bits that we enjoyed. I mean, I think we have to start with Lucas because we've picked him out maybe 3 or 4 times. But I feel like we're now seeing the wider fan base really starting to just accept that at the moment he is up there with our best players in terms of consistency of performance.
It's weird with Lucas, because I tweeted it yesterday that under Pochettino, like, he had some really good spells where he was coming up with lots of goals and assists and big moments, and he was just generally helping the team. Like, I can't remember too many bad games from Lucas under Poch, but he was never one of his like real favourites, and I guess that was because of the players that were ahead of him. But Mourinho came in, and it's like his performance kind of fell off a cliff, but he's been picking him every week, and maybe it's just because he's just been tired the whole time. But this is now starting to look more like the Lucas of 18-19, when he was a real menace, when he was a net gain for the team instead of like just picking the ball up and running into defenders. He's now beating his man. He's being a nuisance again. He's really, really helping us at a time when we've needed that help.
He's just kind of the embodiment of all the qualities Mourinho demanded after the Dynamo game, when he came out and said, you know, I'm looking for the things that you would give in any workplace, in any walk of life, whatever they were, commitment, honesty, hard work. He just basically put us a fucking shift in. really goes for it. He always harries every loose ball. He's useful defensively and offensively. I think just after setting up the goal, he kind of was back at the near post getting his head on a Villa free kick, I think it was.
Yeah.
So he's putting his body on the line, and he's making a big difference in the final third. And I think the former was kind of always what he was doing, but he wasn't always doing the latter. But he's really, yeah, he's really developing an end product as well. And obviously he set up Vinicius' goal and put Kane in to win the penalty. So he was decisive yesterday in a big way.
Go on.
I was just going to say, confidence is clearly really playing a big part in his game, though, because that thing that we've said about Lucas is when he runs at people, he's really hard to stop. He has very quick feet. He's incredibly fast dribbler. And I thought it was quite impressive last night. He sat Matty Cash down, and not many players in the Premier League will sit Matty Cash down this season. He's a very good defender. And I just thought that was a real sign of the sort of confidence that he's playing with at the moment, that he's willing to run at players. Because I was a couple of seasons ago, I think it was against Inter Milan in the Champions League, he was breezing past their defenders at a time when Inter Milan had a very good sort of defensive unit. And I remember thinking, God, if he could take that confidence and move it into the Premier League. And I feel like we've seen it so little. But he's playing in a system now where he clearly feels confident. And yeah, I think we're seeing the best of what he has to offer.
So, I mean, should we, with that in mind, should we be talking about the team selection in the good section?
I think probably Jose deserves credit for making as many changes as he did and getting a clean sheet and a result. There's no way you don't give the manager credit for that.
It feels like it's something he could have done a couple months ago, though. Like, I think we knew with some of the players that perhaps failed in Zagreb, we knew that kind of performance was coming. Like, we've been waiting, and we'll come on to them later, but we knew Tanganga and Rodon and Lo Celso had been injured, but he's come in, and Vinicius just needed a chance. Like, we knew these players had these kind of performances in their lockers to come out and try and improve things for us. It's annoying that we've had to wait to this point for, I think Mourinho said that we had to be sad in order to react. It was annoying that we had to get to that point for him to pick the team in that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I mean, why couldn't Tanganga have played right back against Zagreb? Why couldn't he play centre back against Zagreb? Why is Lo Celso only coming on as a sub? We know Winks and Sissoko. I know we're going back to Zagreb now, but it's just like it felt like everything that happened against Zagreb, we already knew most of the stuff that happened there. So as much as Mourinho deserves a lot of credit for getting it right yesterday, I think, you know, what Sean said, it feels like we knew a lot of this stuff already.
I think the bigger question is actually looking forward, where Rodon and Tanganga are concerned, because Spurs made a point of tweeting that Aurier and Alderweireld were ill yesterday. So actually, had they been available, would Rodon and Tanganga have started, or would it have been Aurier and Alderweireld? And if you consider that Son was injured and would have definitely started for Vinicius, and then that Lo Celso's been injured and has just kind of come back in, then actually there weren't that many dramatic changes from Arsenal that weren't enforced, if that makes sense. So I think that the question will be, you know, if are Alderweireld and Aurier going to come back in when well and fit after the international break? I mean, it looks like Doherty's been kind of, you know, bombed out, or he certainly was bombed out. And we know that Dyer's been out of favour for a while, but I'm just intrigued to kind of see whether he considers those two a kind of medium to long-term solution, or whether this was, you know, genuinely in part just an enforced couple of changes due to unforeseen circumstances.
We do also need to, I suppose, look at the league position now as well in the good, because I think Sean, you might have tweeted it. It's like somehow we're here and we're sitting 3 points behind Chelsea. You know, it's undeniably a much better place to be in. And I suppose, Dan, what was interesting there is that suddenly it feels like there's less wiggle room to make dramatic kind of sweeping changes based on the idea that, well, look, listen, this guy wasn't up to it, so I'm giving the kids a go. I'm giving someone who cares a go, because it's not enough to care. You have to sort of pick up the points, given that we're so close to the top four, just in terms of what it means to the club.
Well, what I suspect might happen now is Mourinho doesn't have to rotate because of there's no Europa League. He can more or less pick a similar team or the same team for the next 10 games. You know, there isn't a huge amount of pressure now, injuries and illness aside, to chop and change. So, you know, I wonder in that context whether we might have already seen the best of Bale. You know, I wonder whether Dele's going to get much more game time. You know, I suspect now that Mourinho will go to what I would call the kind of fundamentals 11, which is, you know, the players who are going to track back, who are going to work hard. I think Bergwijn might be the sort of go-to first sub. I think Lo Celso might play the right wing role. And then the big question, as I said, is it's kind of who gets into fundamentals 11 at right back and who gets in the centre-half. You know, is that Tanganga and Roden for the rest of the season or for some of it? Or does that, you know, see Aurier and Alderweireld kind of come back in? But, you know, that's what's going to interest me, because there isn't a huge amount of pressure now to switch things up. And, you know, you sort of fear for someone like Winks, you know, whether he's going to, you know, even get on the pitch again this season, because there's not that weight of matches now.
I suppose there is just one caveat to that. If he goes to the kind of fundamentals approach, will he then turn his back on it in 4 or 5 weeks' time for the League Cup final? You know, suddenly that if you look at that team that was put out yesterday, I mean, we got the job done, but I would really worry about that defensive line against Man City's front three in the first half an hour.
I have to say, I think after the international break, we start seeing the games will start being practice matches for the Carabao Cup final. That's what I imagine. Whatever formation team we're going to play in that final, we're going to start experimenting with that sort of style against, who have we got next?
Newcastle.
Yeah, Newcastle.
Man United after that.
How can we out-defend Newcastle? That's the real question.
That's a horrific game.
God. Yeah, I think I tweeted
getting down on a Sunday afternoon to watch Spurs Newcastle.
Imagine if that's at 7:15. I can't remember what time it is. If that was 7:15 on Sunday evening, it's just almost unfair to people, isn't it?
7:15 in Newcastle. You going to that one, Dan?
Yeah.
No.
Dan cycling to that one.
Oh God, I've turned up at the Newcastle training ground.
I did once go to Newcastle. I was promised a big interview with DeAndre Yedlin when I was at ESPN. And I got the train up. I got 10 minutes with DeAndre Yedlin, and it was a 6-hour round trip. No, about an 8-hour round trip by the time I got to King's Cross. Oh. 10 minutes with DeAndre.
Well worth it, though.
Yeah. It was good stuff.
Tells a very similar story about that, of going all the way to Newcastle to go and do an interview with Andy Carroll, who then whilst the cameras were set up and the lighting was all set, came into the room and just sort of said, nah, don't fancy it. And went home. had to do the 3-hour train all the way home. Oh. Absolutely incredible. Let's talk about that first 30 minutes while we're just on that subject, because we didn't start like a side that was looking to put everything right straight away and fire back with lots of passion and intensity. What do people make of that first period?
It was fairly disjointed, wasn't it? We sort of mentioned it on our WhatsApp group there. It sort of looked like a bunch of players who were trying quite hard, but didn't have any real plan to move the ball up the pitch. Lots of players sort of taking the ball and running it individually. But as usual, we're getting to the edge of the area and it wasn't really sticking with Vinicius. His first touch is still not great. The only player who was sort of knitting it together quite nicely was Harry Kane, in that you know, he was playing slightly behind Vinicius. It was a 4-4-2 and a 4-5-1 at times, wasn't it? It worked at times. It was interesting to see something different. I've wanted to see them on the pitch together, so I think he deserves props for getting them on and getting the result. I liked what Lo Celso did. I think I said to you guys, he's just neat in possession,
it's lovely to watch, isn't he?
Yeah,
he's like really lovely to watch.
Well, Lamella still continually takes that extra touch. He plays the ball, and that for me is the difference between them. So it felt like, yeah, we're playing all right here. We played some football, but I really didn't see how we were going to score. So it was quite nice of Martinez to absolutely balls it up. And then Lucas Moura does really well. He does really, really well. And the fact that the one thing I think you can say about the Spurs team is that too many players play the ball and then don't keep moving. Well, Lucas Moura's played the ball and then he's gone and got it back and created the opportunity. Really deserves massive credit for that. And that seemed to settle the squad massively after that. We looked very calm in possession, if not slightly blunt at the top end of the pitch.
It was a big exhale moment, wasn't it?
Mm.
Okay. Right. Relax just a little bit. Because you do get the impression that off the back of that first half hour, if Villa had scored suddenly, like it could have got bad really, really fast. Let's move on to the ugly. I think we have to talk about Mourinho's social post with "my boys are still my boys," John Terry. Now, I've been a champion of Jose's Instagram since he started it, but that's a danger. That
I have never felt more like your dad in my entire life looking at a social media post, like. Because I think when footballers post something like after a loss, like if they're just getting on their normal lives or something, I think that's just, it's a bit overblown, like the story behind it. But, and I was going to give Jose some lenience in that if he saw John Terry in the moment and he hugged him or whatever, then that's, you know, he's seeing someone he's worked with for so many years and you can appreciate that. But with everything that happened last week, with the mood in the club, the mood that generally Jose sets as well, and to come out and to have made the change that he did to his team with his boys, and then to put that on Instagram with well-known Chelsea legend who hates Spurs and Spurs hate him and all this kind of stuff, it was just like, the thing is, I was gonna say read the room. He is reading the room. He knows what he's doing.
It was a bit of a Jolie and Lescott moment, wasn't it? It was just like, we don't really need to see a picture of your car right now, Jose, or what you've won before. We've just gone out of the Europa and lost to Arsenal. Read the room a little more. Give us something like, I don't know, Moo Cammy. I don't know.
It was literally Joe Hart job done. We've had two in a week. That's unacceptable. It was the fact that he was singing Sweet Nothings into his ear for about 5 minutes after the game as well. It was weird. It was weird. It was like, as Sean said, sort of like read the room. You know our feelings towards John Terry, and John Terry knows our club quite well. Jose Mourinho must know about that. Yeah.
Can I throw this out into the mix as well? I was pretty peeved about this. Like, I was really quite annoyed about it, and I was going to try and not be, but it really annoyed me a lot. primarily, well, because it's John Terry, but also because earlier on in the season, I got such joy from Jose Mourinho sticking it to Frank Lampard on the touchline. Yeah. Going and telling him to shut up. I didn't see you talking last week when Jurgen Klopp told you to sit down, so don't talk now, or something to that effect. And I was like, okay, you're embodying what you said about wearing the pajamas, about being like, when you join this club, you have to be Spurs through and through. That needs to remain consistent. And and just for me, who's someone, when I'm watching Spurs, I only see Spurs, you know? I'm not sitting there and being like, oh, I'm really enjoying watching Aston Villa play. Whenever it's anyone else, whenever I love watching Aston Villa play, whenever they're playing anyone else, but against Spurs, that goes out the window. And I want that to go out the window for Jose on match day, you know? I want that to go out the window for him as well. So it really did bug me. I don't, well, maybe I'm going a little bit too far. What do you think, Dan?
It didn't annoy me that much. I mean, I'm not on Instagram for one thing. Not really. I
found your account, mate. Don't
worry. Yeah, I've recently made an account to start posting pictures of my cat.
I'm glad you said cat.
Yeah. What do you think I was going to say?
I heard the big C there, and I thought, oh god, surely not. Not another bad bastard.
I haven't got anything more to add, really. I mean, I think, yeah, maybe it was not a great reading in the room in the context of what's happened in the last week. But obviously, his relationship with Terry is pretty kind of well established, and what they achieved together. And I think probably he doesn't see Terry as a direct rival as much as he saw Lampard in that way. Given that A, Lampard was the actual manager rather than the assistant, and B, he was at another London club and a big rival. But yeah, I think there might well be an element of kind of, you know, Mourinho's pissed off with his players. He made no secret of that in his interview with us and with Sky post-match. They were both really loaded. So he probably knows that, you know, by reminding everyone that he had this kind of defensive stalwart who, for all his massive character flaws, was a genuine leader on the pitch. He probably thinks it's a good time to remind people of kind of the levels he expects, you know, from his players in terms of those fundamentals that we mentioned before, you know, putting a bloody shift in.
It does sort of help that John Terry is widely regarded as one of the best centre-backs in Premier League history, though, isn't it? Like, unlike Eric Dier, who I don't think will go down with quite the same acumen.
No, but then I don't think Thursday was about being a good player. I kind of agree with Mourinho. I mean, all Spurs really had to do in that game was kind of just turn up and want it enough. And they were playing, you know, a team from the 19th ranked league in Europe. They would have got over the line. So I do think the problem was those kind of intangibles like desire and work rate. And Terry wasn't the most naturally gifted. He wasn't Rio Ferdinand, but he did. I don't know why I'm eulogising about John Terry here.
What's wrong with you?
Love him.
I don't know. I'm just
absolutely love him.
I don't like John Terry, but my point
he's
is...
not going to shag you, mate.
He was bloody brilliant, wasn't he?
Dan actually loved that Insta post. That's the reason he joined. He joined Insta last night after seeing it trending on Twitter.
Is there a super like feature on
there? Yeah, exactly. Can I match with Terry? Can I message?
One thing I wanted to add into the ugly, and it's not really to do with us at all. In fact, it's not. It's more about how bad Villa are without Jack Grealish. And the drop-off without him is quite astounding. And it does make you wonder, how good is Jack Grealish? And the answer is probably incredibly good, right?
Would you say he's worth more than 4 million?
Not if you chuck Onora in there, of course. Yeah, I saw Mourinho sort of ruling Spurs out going for him, which, I mean, I don't know why I expected anything less, but he's one of those footballers that you'd watch him at any club. And I think I'd watch any club to see Jack Grealish play. I think he's absolutely fantastic. And I didn't mind his tracksuit. Get over it.
I didn't mind it either. I didn't enjoy the 10 minutes Hawthorne and Neville spent going on about it. Like, guys, I pay 100 billion quid a week for...
I did quite enjoy...
If Sean's giving it a seal of approval, then Grealish should be worried.
Brilliant. I did quite enjoy listening to two gents who are not kind of in their 20s sort of dance around the idea of how can we somehow mock this without being accused of being arseholes, basically. Yeah. They sort of like threw it onto each other, which was great. Just on the ugly, we should just finish this section with a kind of touch on the players that we talked about earlier on. So it was Alvaro that was supposedly ill. It was
Aurier,
who was ill as well. Doherty was dropped out of the match day squad. We saw Bale not come on. We saw Dele not come on. We saw Dele wearing a pair of Joe Hart's goalie gloves. was there anyone else in there that we sort of felt like, that's not
Winks
a good
was
look.
Dropped from the squad
Winks,
as well.
Sorry, Winks dropped from the squad as well, yeah. I don't know, what were people's thoughts on that? Do they think that's kind of the right way to go about it? Does the win kind of cover over that? Is there any argument now to the contrary, seeing as we won 2-0?
I'm going to let you take this.
All right. But just with Lo Celso and Lucas playing out wide, it seemed like there's a much bigger emphasis on players who would just run for 90 minutes being included rather than the likes of Dele and Gareth, who, like, Gareth Bale's been brilliant over the last month or so. But in those games where Spurs have had the ball and have had that little bit more freedom to get forward and for him to get in the box, but it seemed like including Lo Celso and Moura and just having them run just laps around Villa Park was like that direct message of I want these guys out there being my troops and like bleeding for me rather than having that flair on the pitch.
It's an interesting crossroads, isn't it? Really interesting crossroads.
I do feel like the squad's maybe in a comparable position to when Pochettino came in that it's, I think it's a really good squad, fundamentally. I think there's loads of good players in there. But Pochettino had to kind of freeze out the cabal, right? Like a sort of group of senior players who were...
I have never heard that name, but that is amazing.
I can't take credit for that. It's from a WhatsApp group I'm in. But it felt like there was this kind of group who he quickly sort of lost patience with. I think it was Kabul, Kapu, and Adebayor really, but then, you know, a few others followed, like eventually.
Was that Benteleb?
Benteleb
well.
Followed, and, you know, Andros Townsend obviously as well, and there were others. But fundamentally, he had the building blocks for you know, a great team already at the club. And it's hard to put your finger on kind of who might be the issue, and I don't want to name any names because I honestly don't know, but, you know, just going on Lloris's interview and then going on Mourinho's slightly cryptic interview with Sky where he talked about kind of player agents and outside influences, you know, it does feel like probably there are a few elements of the squad that just aren't happy at the moment and probably need a change of scene. I don't know who they are. I also think it's probably partly some deflection, some kind of clever deflection from Mourinho to you know, take the heat off himself and his players. So there's probably an element of that. But yeah, you feel like, particularly based on what Lloris said, that felt very honest, you feel like there are some sort of rotten factions in the dressing room at the moment.
Yeah, and only 10 games to go. It could be sort of quite a telling period of time, couldn't it? Giving us a steer towards what's going to happen in the summer. Let's just finish up on the beautiful bit. So Vinny Celeb, I thought, was really nice. I thought that was a genuinely quite nice moment, seeing a guy who you can see absolutely desperate for that opportunity and desperate to get that goal. And I mean, that very much backs up what Mourinho was saying. And then we've got to look at Harry Kane's stats again, Sean. I mean, the stats just are phenomenal. He now leads the way in assists, leads the way in goals as well. Even at a time when Spurs haven't been performing that well, somehow he's still a bit of a beacon to the rest of the league.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think I think that he's clawed his way back into the Player of the Year race. I thought it was done. I thought Bruno was going to get it without too much problem. But if Kane can keep this up, say Kane finishes the season with at least 20 goals in the Prem and the most assists, say Spurs somehow qualify for the Champions League via the top four, then that's amazing. I think that'll massively help us here. But say we don't fall apart, then I think he's got a real shout of that, and that'll be really good for him heading into the Euros. And it might be able to like put some shine on a nice season, even if we don't win the League Cup, which I'm not expecting us to. But you know, if Kane gets
ahead of him currently, Sean. Bruno.
I honestly think it's just Bruno. Gundogan. I don't think Gundogan. Like I think
Diaz.
I did an article like a few weeks ago, Diaz, which got a bit of backlash, but it's like no defenders, but generally the reason City are top is because they're the best team, and it's not really about the individuals apart from De Bruyne, who's just like this kind of level above when he plays, but he's been injured for 2 months. But yeah, I think it's now just between Bruno and Kane.
He's still got enough time. It'd be very, very difficult not to give it to Harry Kane if he scored 20 plus goals in the league and then got up near 20 assists as well. That would be one of the best individual records that the league's ever seen, you know?
No player in the Prem has ever, I need to double check, but I don't think any player in the Prem has ever led goals and assists in the same season.
Wasn't it, did Henri not?
Henri was one off with goals when he got top of the assists.
Oh, really? So who beat him that year? Was it Shearer?
Van Nistelrooy.
Wow.
The classic.
Yeah, hell of a record to go and beat. Did anyone else have anything else for the beautiful?
I wanted to stick Japhet Tanganga in there. I think whenever he comes in, he looks like the best defender we have. And, he sort of embodies everything that Mourinho is looking for at the moment, which is sort of effort, putting your body on the line, really throwing yourself about, heart on your sleeve. But he's also technically really good. He's a good dribbler. I've probably underestimated it. There was a couple of touches yesterday where he completely took Villa players out of the game. He's fast. He can get down that wing. He's clearly got an engine. He can get up and down. I know the club think he can play right back. So I think he deserves massive props because he just manages to come into whatever team and perform. And I really think he deserves to be getting more time at the moment. I think a lot of Spurs fans would be willing to watch him make the odd mistake in the effort to sort of, right, if we're saying Doherty and Aurier are whatever, let's start giving him games at right back. And I think one thing, a moment that really summed it up yesterday, I think Sean said it before we started, was Barkley had a shot on the edge of the area and Sissoko sort of jogged out towards the ball, put a foot out, and behind him, Tanganga's gone full body on the floor, takes it in the chest and it goes out for it. And I think Barkley's really celebrating and he looked gutted that it didn't go in. But that sort of sums up where he is as a player and how he wants to do for the club. And, we do need players like that. You know, we do need players who are really willing to do that. So I think he deserves to be in there this week.
He doesn't get drafted in for easy games either, does he? Like last season, it was, oh, we're just going to throw you in against Liverpool. And earlier this season, it was like, yeah, we're going away to City. You're going to play right back. And he does always perform. Like, he's, as Santa says, he's always our best defender or close to it. So, yeah, I think
there's enough there, isn't there, Jude, as well? There's enough there that you think someone who's an incredibly raw and talented young guy can add in and refine the bits that you need to be a top defender.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like a technically sound player as well. And I can't remember who it is, but I think I've seen somebody saying, you know, he's brilliant going forward as well. It might have been Chris from Windy Coys who loves that stuff. I don't think we've really seen it.
He loves all that stuff.
what's that like football and that, Jude?
Yeah, football and that. Youth football. No, we haven't really seen it for Spurs in like an attacking sense. I think maybe he came close to scoring against Barra in the cup last season, but that was it.
Yes, yeah, when he ran the length of the pitch almost.
That was great.
Yeah, yeah. But he's got passion as well. P-A-S-H-U-N. We need more of that.
It's all we want to see at the moment. Right, we've got a couple of weeks to relax and just kind of sit on this one for a while, and we can look at the league position and take a lot of heart from that and slowly try and forget losing the North London derby and going out of the Europa League. Should we ask for questions? Should we get in some cues?
Let's do a Q&A one this week because it was quite good last time.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. And feel free to make them a bit weird and wonderful as well.
Yeah. Timeless. Like with,
nice evergreen questions.
Yeah, it doesn't really have to be about this. It doesn't have to be about this punchy season. Let's do it. Maybe slightly softer seasons as well.
100%. And thank you so much for listening. Get those questions in on Twitter, What a Night Pod. Make sure you follow all the guys on Twitter as well. We'll be back again back end of the week. Have a great week, everyone, and enjoy the sunshine.
What a feeling, what a night.